now on Racing Pulse, RSN's racing editor, Matt Stewart.
I don't think anything thrust its hand in the air in the Underwood yesterday for the Cox Plate. I think there might be a wild card now because I'm not sure any of those horses can win the Cox Plate.
For more news, opinion and selections, head to rsn.net.au.
Yes, it is time for the RSN editor, Matty Stewart, to join us in the studio with all of the news. We've got plenty to get through, Matty, from weather, track conditions, and a bit of breaking news there from Mick Price, that two of the most fancy Derby runners at this early stage are now out, off to the spelling paddock. No injuries with the horses, but as you get these young three-year-olds heading towards the staying distance, they're a bit tired. So Mick is going down the conservative route with Art Zeno and Cadazio, and they'll be in the paddock.
Well, one was $8, the other one was $15, and my old mate Distrustful Award is probably due to firm up a couple of points.
Look
now.
At you just twirling the moustache.
You do wonder, don't you, this? I know this is the debate we have every year. If the Derby had been 2,000 metres, would they be pushing on? But are they ready for the 2,500 metres, and does that mean they go to the paddock? So this will come up again, this argument, this year, because it does every year.
It's a perennial argument. Just like one we'll get to a little bit later, which is just a bit of clickbait, I think, for everyone. Just on the tracks, speaking of what it'll be on Saturday, I had a chat to Tim Bailey this morning. They had about 10 mils overnight, 8 to 10 mils, which is what they expected. So it is a good fall because it was really firm. They were expecting this rain to come. They're thinking maybe 10 to 12 mils on Friday, which would put it into the soft 5 range, and then improve to a good 4 by the time the Group 1s arrive. If they get 15 to 20, it'll be a soft 5, soft 6 for the day. So I think things are looking quite good. The way they've managed the track, it's just the question mark about whether the predictions are now correct.
Correct. So Sydney...
Sydney, we may be just betting on Melbourne on Saturday. Currently, it is a heavy 10. It's a mud pit. They had 30 mils overnight. They expect more rain throughout the week and rain on Saturday. So one thing that Randwick has done is it's proven to be a safe racetrack when it's been a total glue pot. And it's going to be a heavy 10 on Saturday. It comes down to visibility. It comes down to safety again.
Bit of a flat meeting anyway up there. It's a bit of a dip.
It's their off meeting, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. So that's interesting. I'll tell you what was interesting was your chat to the Godolphin vet yesterday,
Ben Mason.
And there was three or four things that he touched on. He's very very emphatic in his views, wasn't he? And so we've got a couple of grabs. I think the first one, Mikey, is to do with the issue with the bleeding. And obviously the Caulfield Guineas favourite was ruled out on Saturday morning.
And he was the man that was there with Half Cabin and did the inspection after it was bled.
Yeah, so he bled from both nostrils, which is an automatic 3-month ban. He went on to explain the quirkiness of whether you bleed from one or two. It could be just a sort of a tilt of the head or something like that. But the rules are very very emphatic about it. But he felt that they were a little bit draconian as well, and this is what he had to say about bleeding.
The rules of racing suggest that if it's both nostrils, you have 3 months on the sideline. And if it's one nostril, it is basically you just have to gallop the horse in front of a steward for over 1,000 metres. As long as he doesn't do it again, he's right to race. The difference of that rule is still, I'm still miffed by that rule, because really it's down to literally a head tilt could possibly be the difference between one nostril and two nostrils. Unless it's very forceful and explosive, then two nostrils, blood could come out of both nostrils, and therefore it's deemed to be quite significant. But if there's just a trace of blood in both nostrils, I think that rule really should be looked at again.
Well, you know, in the case of Half Cabin, you know, we've got this rule that the chief vet for Godolphin and other stables just says is basically draconian. It can actually derail the horse's career. He wasn't a fan of the Lasix option in California, saying that a lot of trainers, as you obviously you conducted the interview, don't even like Lasix horses. They feel that they don't try. They look a bit wrung out in the coat, so they're not even desired. He felt that technology, treatment, and so on, modern technology and ongoing proper treatment from stables was working towards the better way of treating bleeders than the current method.
Different grades of bleeders, and he said that Half Cabin, it was not a huge bleed, but he also went to say that if it had been one nostril, what happens then is that the horse works in front of a steward to ensure that it doesn't actually bleed, and then off you go. You're right to race again. And he said it was only a little trickle in the other nostril. So that could be the difference between that being a very promising colt to a $20 million stallion if he wins the Caulfield Guineas, which most people actually did. And he did say off air, and this shows the integrity of James Cummings and the Godolphin operation, that they were all standing around there. He was the vet. The foreman was there. James Cummings was there. And James Cummings was just bereft. They were all looking at each other and said, look, there is a little trickle on this other side of the nostril. And James just said, "It total transparency. We tell the stewards exactly what has occurred. We tell the public what has occurred. Unfortunately, this is what happens. He is out." Now, in days gone by, I'm sure there would be a lot of pressure on certain trainers and individuals to say, hey, no one's going to know about this. Let's just proceed. But that shows...
And current days. Don't worry about it.
that just shows... I mean, that's a $20 million call pot potentially with that horse. And I think that's credit to Godolphin and James Cummings.
And he also said... you know, technically, the horse could have gone out and, regardless of the bleed, and gone out and performed to its best ability.
So, safely. Yeah.
So I think he's basically challenging, in the modern world, are we still attached to a very old way of dealing with bleeders? So that was one thing. And the other one, which I thought was really interesting, and it was kind of good to hear too, it's almost like a... There's a bit of ping pong between here and the internationals regarding, oh, come on, you guys, you've been a bit tough. No, we're not, you know, all that sort of thing. And I know there's a lot of big owners locally who are trying to put a bit of pressure on RV to slacken their stance a little bit to try and ignite more international involvement. And we have seen the consequence of lack of international involvement this year where it hasn't got that dollop of cream. It just hasn't got it. So it's an interesting debate, but... He was emphatic when he was staunchly defending the way we the strict veterinary protocols, and a really interesting comment about the nature of the overseas raiders.
The internationals are a subpopulation of horses that have come here. Let's just talk about the ones from England for a minute. And just in their home country, they have twice as high as a fatality and musculoskeletal catastrophic rate than we do in Australia, just in their own population. Look at the statistics. So they're more brittle. They break down more often over there than they do here. So we're then importing these horses into our major cup races to race on different surfaces than they're used to. They travel around the world to us. So, yes, we have got a very much a microscope on them. And the scrutineering of those horses, that small group of horses, is so high because of what's happened in the past. But these are the same population of horses we're getting problems with. And not just that, there are other horses you don't see, which are down at Werribee, who don't even make it to the racetrack.
Yeah, I don't think he could have been any clearer in what he had to say, because it's a... And I went on to ask him about its opinion. It's an opinion-based situation, because one vet can call a horse lame, another will say it's okay. And he said, yep, it is. It's how you see it, but there is different layers of experience, and you can't get more experience than what the current Racing Victoria vets that are making these calls.
Yep, so I think it may forever change the nature of the way the Melbourne Cup has evolved with the amount of internationals, but I think, as Ben Mason described, he said, if one argument's stronger than the other, the protecting of the race from this different horse population who are more prone to injury is obviously the higher priority, and what will be as a consequence of that. So it was a really interesting chat. If anyone's interested in getting more, there was a few other things he touched on, like the Jewish EPIH situation and other things, then it's on the podcast. But it was a very interesting chat with a very dynamic sort of young vet.
Yeah, Ben will be a semi-regular contributor to the program, so looking forward to trying to demystify a lot of the issues that some of the horses have in racing and getting his thoughts on those issues as well. Matty, what else is making news today?
Pardon me. Interesting tweet sent by a very well-known trainer called Kylie Valor after she and her husband, Stephen, combined with a winner at Mildura yesterday, Angel One, who is named in honour of Kylie's mum, who passed away, who died recently. And it was all in relation to a situation that arose at the Colac track some time ago, where Kylie was the leading trainer for 7 years at Colac, gave a greater financial return to the Colac track than any other trainer. But due to a ongoing impasse between the club, other individuals, and Kylie and her husband, Stephen, Kylie has been the clubs have their own the judge, jury, executioner rule when it comes to whether, like a landlord, whether they allow trainers to exist at their track. And Kylie was booted basically from Colac. She's now training at Mildura. She sent a very interesting text describing the situation that it had unfolded at Colac with the head of the club and other people down there. It was like a Hatfields and the McCoys situation. I've spoken to the ATA. The ATA are extremely disappointed with the way the Colac Race Club has handled the situation with Kylie and Stephen Vella. They're attempting to introduce some mediation. I spoke to a club representative this morning who said they cannot comment on the issue. But there is a very big blue brewing down at Colac involving their most successful trainer, probably other than John Sadler, their most successful ever trainer, who's been asked not to. John Sadler trained there early in his career. A trainer who has had no recourse has been asked to leave over a series of incidents down at the track, which my understanding is stemmed back from the introduction of mandatory COVID masks and sort of blew up from there with a series of incidents. So just sort of following that story through at the moment. And it's fair to say Kylie was extremely emotional when I spoke to her on the phone about it this morning and had a good chat to the ATA as well.
So as landlord, a club has the right to terminate any trainer and their, I suppose, what, their rental agreement any time they wish?
Yeah, without any a further explanation or requirement. That's their right. It's a bit like a landlord situation.
Mm. Well, okay. It's that'd be something that the ATA would be, ATA would be looking into.
ATA is very up on the steel about
it. You'd need a little bit of, I suppose, guarantee if you're going to be training in an establishment that you're not going to be uprooted.
Well, and it's not like kicking a tenant out and then saying move three doors down. You've got stables, horses, owners, all sorts of things. So prickly situation down there, but certainly a fascinating story, and we'll delve further into it.
I'll tell you what always gives us a laugh is the Sydney-Melbourne to and fro. I had Chris Roots and Damien Ratcliffe on yesterday, and we like Chris Roots, but he drinks the Sydney Kool-Aid as well.
Not as much as some.
Not as much as some, no. But yesterday he was very much in agreement with Richard Callender, who each year rolls out the Everest is better than the Melbourne Cup. I want to say well done to Gilbert Gardner, who writes for the Herald Sun, who wrote a very, I think, thoughtful opinion piece, which basically was returning serve. And the first couple of lines, I think, sum it up. Puppies bark to get attention, so too some one-eyed Sydney racing bugles. The Everest is better than this, or more talked about than that. Only thing missing is a swing set, slide and monkey bars. Ever heard of a Victorian compare the Caulfield Cup to another race? What about the Cox Plate, let alone the Melbourne Cup? The short answer is no. Why? Because Victorians and racing especially are comfortable in their own skins. Comfort should not be confused with complacency. And it goes on to say that it's a bizarre argument that Sydney siders continue to bring up about which is bigger, which is best, and which has more people talking about it.
Well, I know what Gilbo's alluding to there as well, and it was one of the many things that I think about with this whole Sydney-Melbourne war, in inverted commas, that goes on, is the Sydney people sort of tend to boast that, aha, we caught you napping, we caught you on the hop, you got complacent, and we seized the advantage. I think the Victorian angle to that has always been, we didn't know that we were in a war. We didn't know that we had to defend ourselves against this unexpected encroachment and all that sort of stuff. So when Sydney says, aha, we got you, you're asleep at the wheel and you're not flash and dynamic, we sit here and go, well, we've got one of the greatest sporting festivals in the world. We didn't realise that we were potentially under threat, nor should we be. So, yes, I'm with Gilbert, but I'm sure they got a lot of clicking over that one.
Tell me, we're going to have a chat in... We're going to take a break. We're going to go back through the annals of time and have it. Is he going to be... he will be remembered, I think, when history writes the racing books about what great trainers there were.
Epitaph? Is that what it's called? Epitaph?
And we're not killing him off early, but Clary Connor's Group 1 results and the champions that have been through his stable have been phenomenal. We're going to have a chat to Clary about one of his great Caulfield Guineas moments in a minute. But on Saturday, we're going to catch up with another legend as well and speak to Darren Beedman to see how much Animo maybe reminds him of Lonro.
Yeah, I had a really lovely chat to Darren Beedman yesterday about Animo and Lonro. Of course, he rode Lonro to about 18 occasions for 11 or 12 wins, including that epic Caulfield Stakes where he ran down Sunline on a leader's track. And we can talk more to Darren Beeman about that on Saturday, but he's given me some lovely, this is why they are similar, this is why they aren't similar type things. The one thing that he said, and the story will be online soon and we can talk more on Saturday, it was that they've both been given a chance to show how good they really are. They raced at 2 competitively, 3, 4. Lonro, I think, went on to 5. Animo's now 4, and he's already proven that he's a good weight for age horse. So one of the refreshing angles of the conversation with Darren Beedman, and Clary Connors might have a view on this as well, with he had a lot of terrific colts as well, was how much do you push him before you realise what's really under the bonnet, and how far do you, I mean, how conservative are some without finding out? And maybe that's a reason why we're breeding a lot of weak, squibby horses, is we don't test the stallions. So that was an interesting comparison. He said one's a little bit taller than the other. One, he said Animo wants to be your mate, but then when you get close, he wants to headbutt you. So he's a bit of a con artist. And Lonro was a slightly different type, and all these different sort of comparisons. But the one thing he said they had in common is they're both terrific weight for age horses you can ride anywhere, and that's what Animo has become.
So. Well, you can read about that on RSN. You can have a listen to Darren Beedman. We're going to have a chat to him on Saturday morning live out at Caulfield. Quick break. When we come back, we'll open up the time capsule and chat to Clary Connors.